Hello, Courtney. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. I feel like singing.
We can make this a musical podcast.
I'm in sort of like a happy, funny, fun mood today. It's supposed to.
That's nice.
Yes. Who is our guest today? Let's see. Dale Rose. Rose. Rose.
Yeah. I'm
That
looking
sounds
forward to talking
familiar.
to him.
That sounds familiar. Rose. Rose makes me think of flowers and romance. And why am I thinking about romance and chocolates? And oh my gosh, Courtney, do you know what today is?
I do not.
It is my wedding anniversary. Oh my God, I have nothing.
And
I bought nothing. Ooh, I gotta say it was soft. I've bought nothing. Let me read this bio real quick. And let me not panic. I'm gonna do some quick start shopping during the commercial break, I think. All right. So this is the bio of our guest. As an advisor to senior leaders for over 20 years, Dale S. Rose brings a deep expertise in organizational and individual effectiveness to his coaching. He coaches leaders to achieve their goals by focusing them on practical behaviors that generate tangible results. We'll learn more about Dale Rose right after this commercial and right after I do some quick shopping. You are listening to Tribe Pod, a podcast series of interviews of interest to the HR community. It is hosted by Courtney Lane, produced by Jim Stroud, sponsored by Proactive Talent, and enjoyed by you. Today's episode begins right after this.
On-demand recruiting is an hourly service that we offer where our recruiters work as an extension of your business, helping to fill your positions by finding top talent.
So on-demand recruiting is there to address issues in hiring when a company is experiencing a lot of growth, when they're having some seasonality changes where they may temporarily need to expand their recruiting team. You maybe have a new line of business or a space where you're expanding your business and you need to bring in specialty expertise to help fill those niche roles that your internal team may not yet be ramped up on.
Proactive Talent's on-demand recruiting solution is quite different from a lot of the other models that you're going to see in the workplace. Whereas you're going to pay a contingency recruiting firm, typically on average around 20%, sometimes up to 30% of the first year salary of the person that you hire. And in that same period of time, you'll spend less than a quarter of that with Proactive Talent's managed on-demand.
For more information on Proactive Talent, visit them online at proactivetalent.com or click the link in the podcast description.
So today I'm joined by Dr. Dale Rose, a nationally recognized expert in leadership development, 360 feedback, and assessment-based human resources solutions. And we are excited to have him on here to chat with us today. So welcome, Dale. Excited to dig in with you.
Thank you, Courtney. Great to be here.
So would love to just start things off by digging a little bit more into your background and understanding who you are. I think it helps just provide some good context to the conversation. So I know you come from a background in industrial and organizational psychology. I actually have my master's in that as well. So love the field, know the field. It's a pretty broad field though, or at least can it get applied very broadly in the business sense. And so I would be curious to hear, how did you end up in the space where leadership development or assessments and feedback, where that's really where you found your interest and started really focusing your time and attention?
Yeah, so industrial organizational psychology is a great field, of course, near and dear to my heart. Congratulations on your affiliation there. When I started, a lot of it was oriented around selection. It was a lot of testing, test development assessments and things like that. And the measurement aspect of that and the outcome aspect of it seemed really exciting to me, being able to use data to drive decisions. But as my career progressed, I was interested in applying these assessments to leadership. And I was particularly interested in Okay, we got somebody on the job, but now they're not doing well, or they're doing great, but we really need them to level up to get to this next role, et cetera. And so I started, my foundation was in social psychology. And so I was really interested in the confluence of the social system and the individual. So is it the person or is it the situation? And so I felt like that's kind of where I ended up gravitating toward 360 feedback, where it's a little bit of a blend of both. You have a common metric, you've got raters, but it's situational as well, because it's these raters at this time on these items. And so for me, it was just a really perfect blend of ways to look at leadership and understand how leaders are being effective based on the way they're impacting the people around them and not just who they're bringing to the situation.
Well, and I would think that probably everybody listening to this podcast has heard the phrase 360 feedback and probably to some extent has experienced it. But I think the way that organizations end up implementing it looks very different and feels very different from place to place. So when you're educating or you know, helping organizations sort of start to implement or operationalize, do you have some basic tenets of what, like, what is good 360 feedback? What does a good 360 feedback program really actually look like? Because I think there's probably a pretty broad spectrum there of what you've seen.
There's a very broad spectrum. It would not surprise me if some of your audience were listening to the term 360 feedback with dread, and some of them were listening to it with admiration and fond memories. I think the key here and the difference between those two is implementation quality. If a system is built that's really high quality and oriented toward getting leaders to get those insights, it's going to be really effective. If it's not, probably pretty miserable for the people involved. And so the difference there is you need an instrument that's got content that's relevant, right? I literally know of a commercial instrument that asks a question: if this person was a dog, what breed would they be? This is not what I would call quality content. I could go on about the, you know, ways in which that's bad, but the relevance of the content to my job, to the culture, to the organization is important. The way it's messaged and the use of it needs to be clear to everybody. There are a lot of ways. You can use it for performance management. You can use it for development. You can use it for everything in the middle. But from my perspective, rules of engagement need to be clear. What's the anonymity level that we're providing? How are the data being used? What are the expectations? In the best case scenario, it's going to be developmental. It's going to be developmental almost all the time. But you ought to be able to also use it for broader organizational needs. And so I think doing those things are going to be key. You also want a report that's clear and easy to use. I've seen some reports that are just unbelievable. You need a PhD to understand them. And indeed, you know, you end up having to hire a PhD to help you explain it. And what you ought to be doing, though, is not bringing in a PhD to explain the results, but following up with a coach, somebody who can spend an hour with that individual, helping them bridge the gap between the data and their real world experience so that they can come up with a plan. Not explaining how to read the report, that should be easy, but it's amazing how powerful it can be to have somebody sit there and explain or work with you really to understand for yourself, this isn't a report card, this is a reflection of this point in time. And you can do something with the data. And if you can, a good coach is going to orient them that way. So those are the big ones. I think organizationally, the other aspect is really every leader in the organization should be getting the feedback. And when it's used kind of here and there and, you know, for different, then it starts getting, well, why did she get one of these? And why didn't he? And really everybody should be getting feedback every year. When you do that, you know, then you can have real impact at the individual and the organizational level.
Well, yeah, I mean, you touched on a couple of key things there for me. The big one being that so often there are tools that are in place that they deliver the feedback, put it in the leader's hands, but then the leader's like, and now what do I do with it? Yeah. Like, how do I turn somebody's opinion of somebody on my team into action. Right. And it's a challenging, I mean, it's a challenging bridge, especially I would think in particular for new leaders who are just, you know, already sort of faced with not having that sort of muscle of development in general, but then to just hear feedback and not sort of just sort of sit on it, I guess. I think you see that happen a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you hit a key point there, which is the idea of opinion, right? These are perspectives of these individuals. And I think one of the things leaders need to get over initially is the idea that this isn't an objective assessment. It's intentionally subjective. And what you're trying to do is understand the subjectivity. So if a good example is if you've got an item like, follows through on commitments, and your direct reports feel you don't do that, and you feel you do, they're right and you're right. And so understanding that is the key to really making it work. And I think, the key is the commitment to understanding it and then doing something about it. And so to get people into that action, or again, that's where the follow-up is helpful. It's where we like to try to engage the person's manager as well, mm-hmm. so that the manager doesn't necessarily need to see the report. They can, that can be useful. Sometimes it can be distracting, but at minimum, there ought to be an accountability for here's what I learned and here's what I'm going to do different. And that message to the person's manager can really move things forward, right? That level of accountability pushes people into kind of, okay, what am I going to do with it? Because the expectation is that I do something with it.
Well, I feel like as you're speaking there, I'm in my head sort of reflecting on the different times that I've seen 360 myself sort of in action. And I know that I've been in organizations where, you know, 360 went out to people and the feedback was collected, and actually it wasn't delivered to the person. It was delivered to the person above them so that they could then filter it down to them. And I would imagine that in and of itself creates some additional opportunity for gaps and challenges to actually create action behind it. Cause it's kind of like the telephone game. It's going through one more source before it's getting to the end person.
Yeah. So one of the key things is the credibility of the data. And it's not going to be real credible if it's coming to you through, you know, where you're not even seeing it first. In fact, mm-hmm. we advise that you should really, the individual leader should get the feedback themselves before anybody else in the organization sees it, because there can be offhand comments. There can, you know, they need it. It's their information. They need an opportunity to kind of digest it and figure out where to go with it. And the idea that you get something that you feel is, you know, off the wall and your boss has already seen it, it just does not put you in a development mindset at all. And so, yeah, I would say that's probably on the list of not best practice. I've seen worse. I actually had one company I worked with where they didn't even let the person know they were participating. It was just, here's your report. Oh, really? People have been filling out surveys about me. Okay. That's not recommended for sure.
Yeah. There's something about it that, there's a degree of lack of transparency and sort of trust that gets lost in that experience.
That's it. And when you have the trust, then people can really look at it in an authentic way. It can be incredibly powerful. But you have to be able as a leader to come to it with an open mind. I was actually talking to a leader of Fortune 50 company, very senior leader, who was telling me yesterday about his first experience with 360, where he looked at his data and his direct report said that he was just overbearing and driving too hard and burning them out. And on the same items, his boss was kind of meh, doing all right. And, you know, he was like, well, which one am I? And he said it was a really incredible experience for him because he realized, wait a minute, I'm not either one of these. Mm-hmm. They're seeing it this way. He's seeing it this way. And where he actually found success was he went to his direct reports and he said, look at my data. Look at what my boss is telling me. I'm not pushing you hard enough. And they were, you know, of course, blown away. Like, what are you talking about? But also he was able to go to his manager and say, hey, look, you're pushing me harder, but they're feeling a little burnt out. So where do I go? So it's a good example of sort of surfacing issues, but doing it in a way that's a problem solving orientation, mm-hmm. and doing it as how do I bridge the gap between these things rather than there's a right or wrong.
Yeah. Are there, from just like a an implementation perspective alone, are there common challenges you see as you're helping organizations try and actually formalize or operationalize their efforts around feedback, that those sort of common stumbling spots for them?
Yeah, I think, let's see, there's a few. I mean, we run into a lot of organizations that have tried and sort of stumbled, and usually it does come to issues around trust and communication. Having a really good communication plan about what you're doing, why you're doing it, how the data will be used can go a long way to build the needed trust. The other ones, again, I mentioned, I think already the complexity in the report, sort of over-complexifying it is not going to help. Also being really clear with leaders about what's expected after. What am I doing this for? How am I using this? How is it going to be used? But again, that's part of that communication effort. I think that's probably the biggest thing. Like many implementation, you know, sort of OD or assessment, the more senior leadership support you can get, the better. The best ones that we see are really where it starts kind of at the top and cascades down. So there's a sense that, all right, the leaders above me have skin in the game and they can model what really effective development looks like using feedback. And then people below them have the opportunity to fill the survey out first. And so they're familiar with it a little bit, understand the process a little bit before they jump in themselves. So those are the things I think that probably make the biggest difference in implementation. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would have to imagine that over the past 18 months, you've seen some shifts, you know, as we are being, you know, as we're facing the pandemic and sort of the world as it reacted to that. Mm-hmm. You know, what has that looked like when it comes to leadership development and the feedback space? I mean, are there challenges today that outside of COVID itself, but are there challenges today that a year or two ago, leaders, it was probably pretty irrelevant, you know, sort of to how prepared they were to navigate certain situations?
Yeah, it's been an interesting 18 months for sure. I've been saying for a little while, we're learning something, but we just probably don't know quite what yet. But I think one of the underlying themes, of course, is just the sheer volume and of tasks and shifting. The shifting sands is you know, it's the rules are changing constantly, mm-hmm. and that has put more pressure on leaders than ever before. It's pretty clear this will be the single biggest challenge leaders have faced, because I mean, we've been through big events, right? We've, you know, I lived through 9/11, I lived through 08, I've lived through earthquakes. But these tend to be shorter events and more easily understood. You know, there's some predictability and rhythm to economic patterns. So those things I think were challenges, but this is a uniquely complex challenge for leaders. And what we're seeing is at the beginning, it was very sort of shock and awe and, you know, really just, okay, we've got to get everybody functioning and working from home and that piece of it. And then over time, there was a little muscle memory there. But again, still shifting. And of late, it started to shift a little more into almost burnout and just sort of when will the changing stop? And unfortunately, this year, I suspect it's going to get worse, frankly. Again, not the COVID aspect, but just it's like shifting one way and now shifting back. But shifting back, it's like start, stop, right? Versus, you know, if you're moving in the direction of how do we work safely, now it's, well, what is safe anymore? Is it this or is it that? So those changing sands have really put pressure on leaders. And more than ever, they need that feedback to know, because their own success is unclear to them. They're working remotely, the rules are changing. And so they even more so need to know, well, how am I doing? Is my team feeling supported? Am I pushing hard enough? Maybe I'm over supporting them, but my boss is like, you need to also get results. So there's a real need to get that feedback for leaders. They're hungry for it. And in a culture where it's more about, you know, this feedback is about evaluating you, there's a real reticence to do it. But if you've got a culture that's built on trust and using this kind of feedback for development, then it's quite the opposite. It's, oh no, this is going to be a really helpful support for you to understand the situation you're in and be able to respond to it. So there are definite differences in terms of the way organizations are experiencing and using feedback. And I think it's a good example of when, where organizations have set up a feedback process that's functioning well and supporting leaders before this pandemic hit, they're doing way better. And the ones where they didn't have that, the leaders are burning out quite a bit more.
Yeah, well, and I've even heard of organizations that really, to some extent, at least in the first half of 2020, kind of put some of these processes on pause. They felt like it was taking pressure off of people if these feedback processes weren't in place. And so I would imagine there's a certain segment of the population that, A, there was feedback opportunities that were lost out in that, but also there's a little bit of being out of shape, if you will, of knowing how to like get into that process and what to do with it, you know, when it comes to like collecting that feedback and then actually creating some action behind it.
Yeah, there certainly was that shift. Certainly initially, I think there it was a lot of, you know, really how do we work remotely and things like that. I would say toward the third quarter and fourth quarter of last year, it really shifted back to oh, okay, wait a minute, we need to build that muscle memory back up and get some data and support these folks. Also, feeding it into succession planning started becoming really important, and wanting to do that again with data. It's harder, you know, with everything being remote, it's harder just to get a sense of people, which is how a lot of those processes have been done. And so I think there's opportunity there to use a little bit better data to drive some of that decision making and whatnot. So yeah, but it's definitely shifted back. I think one of the big challenges is not being able to do quite the same sort of leadership programs that have been in the past. And so organizations are recognizing, well, you know, you really can do a 360 remotely. You can get them coaching even remotely. And it's pretty fluid and flexible for schedule. So it's not like you have a whole cohort that has to come together. And so we've seen that being used a lot as a mechanism for, you know, achieving some of those leadership development program goals that are in a more nimble way maybe than has been done in the past.
Has there been a value loss though in that and shifting to where instead of a cohort of folks coming together in a room and going through that sort of development experience together, I mean, is there something that they now in the remote iteration of it that they're losing out on, so to speak?
Yeah, I think certainly we've seen, you know, leaders talk about the value of peer connections that come out of those programs, and that obviously is lost. I think for all of us in every walk of our lives, we're missing that human contact. Mm-hmm. So I think certainly there is something lost in making it remote. So in some ways, I think it really comes down to kind of a getting to a yes and and figuring out how we can get back to some of those programs. But I do think there's some pressure put on, you know, where are the real value components there? I think we'll see it in certainly business travel of, you know, do you need to be there in person? Because the video conference is going to save 8 people a ton of time. And so while those things will still happen, what I like is that the value proposition will come forth more quickly. It'll be, let's do that where it really matters. So maybe it's at the front of the program and at the back end of the program, but it doesn't have to be all week, a week for, you know, 4 times a year or something like that, because the value isn't there to that level and we didn't have video conferencing before the way we do now.
Right.
And we didn't have the digital skills for it. People weren't comfortable with it. People are pretty comfortable with it now. So I see a shift happening for sure to where it'll be, again, more of a hybrid, where we'll get that value in the in-person piece, but we won't overdo it as we may have been before.
Yeah. You mentioned data previously, and I'm curious about that in particular when, you know, when you're talking about 360 feedback or just feedback and development in general, are there key pieces of data that you build into your programs or you recommend in your programs? I mean, what are those key sort of metrics or success markers that an organization should expect to get out of a, you know, feedback or development program?
Yeah, it's funny. One of the, there's that Woody Allen quote, I guess, right? That one of the key ones, honestly, is response rate. Are people giving you feedback, right? If you look and if your response rates are under 80% or so, who's missing and why? So I think it's a simple one, easy enough to get, but I think looking at how what's the response. The other one is, kind of quality of the data. We see quite a bit of range in terms of the quality of feedback people are giving and therefore are getting. And so one of the things we like to look at is the comments, for example, and the response rates by item to say, oh, wait, actually people are being a little reticent here. They're holding back. And that can be data in and of itself for the organization that they need to build up more of that trust. So looking at and understanding across the organization, how good is the feedback we're getting? We saw a number of years ago all these kind of feedback app things come out, and those things were, all the research showed they just produced a ton of positive feedback and nothing particularly useful. It was a lot of attaboys, right? So it sounded good, it seemed easy and quick, but it didn't generate quality data. So I'd be looking at those. But that's kind of the front end. The back end is the biggest piece, which is how good are your development plans? Are people are leaders walking out of the process feeling that they understand their strengths and weaknesses? They feel like they know what to do with the data. They've got a plan, and that those plans are pretty well conceived, right? It's not, I'm going to be a better communicator. Okay, that's great. So you can actually look at all those data points. Those are pretty readily available data points in one of these processes. And so within HR, you can kind of step back, aggregate them up, and evaluate how are we doing on these items, and then adjust accordingly. And you can pretty easily key in where those areas are. If you see reluctant raters, kind of weak comments, there's got to be some trust issues going on here. If you see, there's not much in those action plans are pretty thin. Okay, well, we can beef up the work on the action plans. Maybe we do need some more, one-on-one coaching or something like that to put some quality control in there. So those are probably the key criteria I'd be thinking about in terms of what how you're getting the right kind of feedback to leaders.
Yeah. Just sort of more of a logistical question, but I'm curious if you have an opinion on it. Is there, or if there's research that supports a right answer on this one, is there a right number of times per year or right cadence to how frequently people should be going through this? Because you hear of the annual, that's the classic, but I've also seen organizations that, man, they've got a pretty active recruit, review process or feedback process where there's almost this a degree of exhaustion on the end of the people, the respondents of like, okay.
That's a key question, right? How much is enough? How much is too much? And I think so interesting, we have we just published our sixth edition of our benchmarking study, Current Practices in 360 Feedback, where we do a benchmark. We benchmark about 100 companies around the country on what are they exactly doing, and in a real detail and real depth. And it's about 41% of companies provide feedback on an annual basis. That's not like a lot, right? So really, it's a bit of a range. What we would say though is once a year is right. That is the right cadence because things shift. You move. You get different direct reports. You get your job shifts around a little bit. And you ought to be, I think we think about it as maintenance, right? You're just kind of making sure you're in line and you understand the impact you're having. But we would say that too much is too much, too. It's not that people need more feedback, they need better feedback. And they need feedback that they can really digest, come up with a plan they can take action on. And coming up with a plan you're going to take action on for a 2-year period is not very realistic. But you can really come up with a plan for what am I going to do next year to be a better leader? Let me understand how I'm doing with this group now, and then you can act on that, make movement, and then do it again. And it's not that big of a lift. If the surveys are done right, you know, it takes 5 to 8 minutes to fill out a 50-item questionnaire that can make a huge difference in a leader's life. So what I would say is every leader ought to get it every year, and they ought to be given the support to really take a look at it and dive deep. But if they're getting it every day and it's the boom, 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 it's just going to fade into the distance, and they're not going to do the thought work that's going to make a difference for them as a leader. You don't just get a whole bunch of nits and then that makes you a better leader.
Right. Well, I'm curious, do you have any organizations or companies you've worked with where you feel like they've they're sort of a shining example of how they've really done it well, whether it's the program itself or how they've, you know, supported the leaders in the organization or implemented?
Yeah, we've got a number of examples of recently, certainly, and I would love to share their names, but they would love me not to. So I respect their interest there. But I can give you an example of a food processing organization, food, you know, kind of agricultural and food industry, where they had had a particularly poor experience with 360s that had been used kind of to find the poor performers and flag them as kind of a last ditch effort before letting them go. Hmm. It really got a bad reputation, and a new director of talent came in, and she recognized the value of it, was a little reticent because of the history, but felt like it was the right thing to move leaders into it. They were trying to level up their organization. They had a kind of a real successful company, but kind of hurting it from its own success, if you will, mm-hmm. and kind of a little bit of complacency. And so she felt like it was a great way to infuse some performance conversations and get people talking about how they could get better. And she really did an amazing job of getting leadership all the way at the top. The president of the company was engaged in not only the content and the model, the leadership model of what success looked like for their strategy going forward. Now, he didn't write the items. We were helpful with that. If you can avoid it, don't let your CEO write items. They write really bad survey items. But the framework was key. And so you had engagement at the top. And so she built it up. What she did that was really great, though, was she messaged out to people that it was a kind of a new day, and that she owned the fact that it hadn't been done well before and what it was going to be used for, and that at the very top they had built the content. Mm-hmm. And so, again, people were like, oh, well, the CEO thinks these are important, so we should probably look at them. So she kind of got that buy-in, built out the custom survey, and then she did the full process and took her time, spread it out from the top all the way down to frontline managers in 3 different phases. So it was sort of senior team, executive team, mid directors, and then managers, all in different cohorts. And every leader got a, you know, did the survey. They identified their raters, their boss approved the raters. So their boss is already engaged in the process and who was gonna get it. When they got their report, they met with a coach for an hour to get some help in getting what is that mm-hmm. action plan going to be. Action plan got shared with their manager, and they were told to have a conversation with their manager about what the action plan was going to be. And then, and that was very successful. We actually asked each of the leaders, you know, what they got out of it and did they learn and all that, really high marks. But then she took it a step further, and she actually aggregated up all the data around what those action plans looked like and what participation looked like, and then went back to the executive team and said, look, I cascaded this all the way down through our entire leadership group, and here's what's happened. And the senior team couldn't believe it, because they, of course, thought, good luck with that one. But she really turned it around, and I think started making huge gains in terms of moving the people who were, you know, of the kind of prior culture toward the newer culture they were trying to build. And there, that's actually kind of in process. They finished their first year just this January. They did this all through the middle of COVID as well, which is pretty impressive given their industry as well, which was, you know, hit hard, not from a financial standpoint, but an operational standpoint. And so they're now starting year two, and they plan to do it every year.
That's awesome. That's a great example. And I love how she took it a step further and was able to really sort of dig in deeper and go back to that leadership team and let them see the, you know, the fruits of that effort of really digging in and saying, okay, let's do it right this time. And, you know, see what we can truly get out of this. And I would imagine, as you were sort of opening up that conversation and explaining how they were using it in the wrong way, I would imagine there are a lot of organizations that are using 360 feedback, not really in the way it's intended to be used, in the sense that it's being used against people more so than for people or for the organization.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are definitely a lot of places you can step in things when you're implementing a 360 process. It's complicated. It feels very high stakes. But it can be done well. And I think the commitment to doing it well, the commitment to doing it for the right reason is what's going to make the difference. Mm-hmm. It's when those purposes get mixed and that you end up in a, you know, kind of a bad space. And what ends up happening is, of course, ultimately employees start to pull back. They won't use it well. You know, we do see more often than not, though, that there is recovery, right? You can recover from this. You know, the example I just used is a good one, but you can recover. You just have to really go in and be intentional about it and come from the right place. It turns out also not to be a great gotcha tool, right? That may be how it's intended. Some places, that's how they'll try to use it. Just doesn't even work well for that. So I don't see a lot of sustained 360 processes that work that way. Usually they start, they fail for both purposes, they let it go for a while, and eventually someone comes and revives it and really can get it working.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as we're wrapping up our conversation, I'm curious, are there any sort of key takeaways that, if anything else, you would want the audience to sort of, you know, walk away with and have in their head as it relates to feedback and leadership development programs?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big one is recognize that feedback is, I mean, leaders need feedback to be effective. They need, successful leadership is how well you're impacting the people around you. And if you don't know how you're impacting them, you're not going to be successful. And if you do that with individuals well, they'll grow and learn and be better leaders. If you do it with all your leaders on a regular basis, you can change your culture and really get, you know, the organization humming. So come up with a process that works for them and works well. And you can make a huge difference in the success of the organization if you do it right.
If folks want to connect with you or learn more about, 360 feedback and some of the tools and those pieces, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
You can check us out at 3dgroup.net. A lot of good resources there, webinars, things like that. And then you can reach out to me directly. It's drose@3dgroup.net. And I love this stuff. So I'm always happy to talk to people and help them think through how best to use their, develop their processes. You can also get a free copy of our benchmark study, which is a really good primer for kind of, you know, we walk through each of the different pieces and steps, and it's a pretty useful tool. So you can get that right on our website, actually.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dale, for joining us today. It has been a pleasure having you here with us. And thank you to everyone for tuning in and listening.
Thank you, Courtney. I look forward to hearing about your feedback process.
Well, that was pretty interesting there.
Yeah, I enjoyed that a lot. That was a good conversation.
As great as that conversation was, I kept thinking, what kind of 360 feedback would I get if I do not have a present or something to offer on my anniversary?
I think there will definitely be a development plan being put in place.
I'm looking at Amazon as we speak here, and I'm looking at, ironically enough, a new lawnmower, which a riding lawnmower, right? So this is, go with me here. So she likes a well-manicured lawn. So if I get the lawnmower that I want, she'll get the manicured lawn that she wants. It's a win-win. I'm thinking that that might be the way to go. What do you think?
So I'm trying to avoid any sort of like stereotyping here, but that is mm-hmm. such a dude way of thinking about a present.
maybe not. I'm interested to know what our listeners think. Listeners, am I thinking the right way, or is Courtney thinking the right way? Let us know. You can send us an email at tripod, that's TRIBEPOD, at proactivetalent.com. Operators are standing by, and please email quickly because I have to make an order very, very soon. Any other words, Courtney?
Good luck.
If you get a 360 feedback, please say something good. All right. I'll need all the help I can get.